What I want to do today is show you some examples out of the history of ceramics, pottery in particular, pots that I like to look at, which is different than a lot of other kinds of pottery. So it's kind of geared into what I like to look at. Pots that I find to be full of spirit, and that's a quality of that's particular to pots that I think is a lot
full
of its value.
Spirit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to tell us what that means?
You get an idea as we look. Yeah, it's going to be pretty much visual, and I'll be talking about what I'm looking at. Get a sense of how I look at pots and what I look at as an artist. Also some of the themes that run through the history of pottery, all of which are of value for me. First, I wanted to find out if you all know anything about pottery. I know Will does.
Not very much.
Okay. Just real briefly, there's three kinds of pottery. There's earthenware, which is low temperature. There's stoneware, which is high temperature. And there's porcelain, which is white. It's very prized. It has always been very prized.
And the distinction with porcelain is what it's made, is the clay.
Porcelain's a much purer material. Stoneware and earthenware have a lot of debris in them, and they're dirty. Because of the debris, earthenware fires much lower. There's a lot of iron and things in it that when they get hot, they melt. Mm-hmm. Porcelain has none of that in it. It has to get very, very hot to start becoming glassy.
But it is a clay?
It's a clay, yeah. Y'all know how pots are fired? Any question about that? Just briefly. Okay. Traditionally, people have dug the clay. They've dried it out. They build a fire around it in some manner. It gets up to 1,000 degrees, and it turns into ceramic material. It no longer will go back into dirt. That's basically earthenware, 1,000 degrees to maybe 1,500 degrees. Stoneware is 2,300 degrees, very, very hot. That's almost white heat. Porcelain can go up to 2,500 degrees.
How do you get it that hot?
That's the trick. Yeah, and I'll talk about that more as I go along. Traditionally, earthenware, and it's used all over the world, it's what the majority of the earth is, the clay in the majority of the earth's surface is earthenware. It's pretty easy to get to a temperature. You can dig a pit, put the pots in, throw any sort of combustible material on top of it and light that. And with enough heat and enough air, it's going to get to be 1,000 degrees or more. Stoneware is a trickier deal, and I'll talk about that in a little while. Pottery has a long tradition, which is part of what's exciting about it for me. As a potter, the history of clay really begins with the Ice Age. 26,000 years ago, people were working with clay and modeling things. The first things found are in Czechoslovakia, little female figures that were fired up, also some very simple little animal forms. So the tradition goes way back. It's a tradition of working with your hands, engaging the creative process. Clay is also a part of almost all traditions' creation stories. The Bible certainly talks about man being created out of clay and the dust of the earth, which would be clay. The Egyptians had a god that was involved with clay. There are some Egyptians. This is a wall drawing from 1900 BC. So when I mean, these figures are sort of staggering to think of 27,000 years ago, 2,000, 3,000 years ago. This talk is just really sort of jumping at some of that. It's a tremendous tradition.
So, Terry, is this depicting of how they made pottery?
Yeah, You can guess as well as I am what's going on. This is a wheel, this is a kiln. It looks like he's stoking it, getting some fire in. Here's another way, sort of hand building it on his hand. Perhaps he's carrying it on his knee. Perhaps he's carrying it to a market. He's climbing up to load them inside the kiln. I don't know what they're doing. Pottery itself, people have worked with clay for 27,000 years. Pottery itself began, and that was only sporadically around the world, various places they're finding. And again, it's really random, you know, this archaeological, to find a form that has not been broken or decomposed over that amount of time. But pottery itself took off around the world 6,000 BC. That's when places like the Mesopotamia, England, any places a lot of clay, Jericho, people really started figuring out how to fire working with clay. This is a pot from ancient Persia, which is now Iran. I suspect it probably had a lot more color on it. It's earthenware, which is the low temperature clay. That's not as strong, and a lot of the color has popped off being buried for, 6,000 years. When people figured out how to make pots, two things happened. One is that culture was revolutionized. They then had an ability to store things, keep rodents out of it. They could stockpile a surplus. There was the ability to trade, and there was quite a bit of trading going on, which has some of the reason that there's a connection between all styles of pottery all over the world. People were doing a lot of trading of ideas and of materials. I think it's interesting as an example of an ancient pot. This is a very strong form. There's nothing naive about it. It's a drinking cup. So you start looking at things like these stripes, how they work with the form, the shape of the relationship of the shape of that foot with the rest of the pot. It's real strong. Somebody clearly had a sense about working with form. This even more so, this is Minoan from the island of Crete in the Mediterranean. It's starting to talk about cultures that were extremely vigorous, extremely rich. Just the quality of the drawing of that octopus. They're relating the nature that's around them, working with references to the creation, sort of interpreting what they see all around them, and having a lot of fun with it too. Just sprawling that animal across, that octopus across the side of that pot.
When did the wheel come into play? Was that right along with the beginning there?
I'm not sure about the wheel. Uh-huh. Not sure. I'd have to look that up.
Well, this wasn't formed on a wheel.
Could be.
What, do you think so?
Could be. I'm not sure when the wheel came along. Mm-hmm. This is 1500 BC. Mm-hmm. But I don't know when the wheel came in. A lot of what you can do in the wheel, you can do by hand. Another ancient pot, 1900 BC. This pot gets into another theme. I was going to put up here some real basic elements of art, also known as sacred geometry. The cross, the spiral, the circle, the square, the zigzag, and the dot. Those are some real basic forms that you find throughout all of art of all time. They have a lot of references to spirituality as well, the circle being the sign of God, the cross being the sign of Christ, the square being the four corners of the natural world. And this pot, to me, is just full of that. It's also full of a lot of humor, again. It's a big part of the history of ceramics. And a certain animalism. This is, to me, pretty clearly taken from looking at animals, sort of interpreting a bird form into a pot. So I show these slides. Look for the sacred geometry that's in them, looking for the strength of the form, just as a shape, and how those forms relate to things that people were looking at, such as animals. Or
where is this one from?
This is from Manoa.
Oh,
this is from Crete. I don't know if it's Manoa, but it's from Crete. It's 1900 BC.
I bet you said it was painted on.
Yeah, probably so. I'd have to really have it in my hands to tell. But it looks like it's painted on, yeah.
It wouldn't be two kinds of clay.
No, I suspect it's one kind of clay, and they painted black, and then they painted white on top of that. Some cultures of the world, if I made this pot, I would paint it black, and then I would paint white. Some cultures in the world would paint it white, and then paint the black. So they're looking at, they're using a different part of their ability to see, and looking at these negative spaces and painting them. You see that in the Southwest United States, which we'll see some of those too. It's a different way of seeing. This pot is, yeah, this is a contemporary pot, relatively last 20 years. A woman named Lucy Lewis. This is Southwest United States, including this one and the next one. This pot is 5,000 years old. This is the oldest pot I'm going to show you. It's from Turkey, Anatolia. And it becomes clear to me that there's a real connection between the past within the ceramic tradition, between what Lucy Lewis is doing, the Indian Pueblo potter, and a potter 6,000, 7,000 years ago in Turkey, what they were doing. Again, using the geometry, we're breaking up the space. Oh, going forward. Okay. This is sort of between the 7,000 years and the current Pueblo work. This is also Southwest America, Southwest United States, the Mimbres potters, Mimbres people that lived from 1000 AD to 1200 AD in the Four Corners area of the United States. It's hard to look at this work from a contemporary point of view and not be really sort of impressed by the sophistication of their designs. Again, it's a lot of this negative, positive stuff going on. It's black and white. It's very, very contemporary. That's to put a different attitude for it. For them, I suspect that it had a lot of different reasons than anything we would find about being sophisticated or any of that. I think what's clear about it is that they were looking at the world around them. They were interpreting it in some way, and they were putting a lot of spirit into the pots. These are mosquitoes. I think it also says a lot about, I don't know how to draw. Come on, who did that?
I was gonna say, how do you even know those are mosquitoes? Because they're not helicopters.
Yeah.
Maybe legs were
bird. Archaeologists debate as to why many of these pots are broken. They're always found in burial chambers, and it's suspected that the pole has something to do with the spirit of the person or the spirit of the pot being allowed to move out of the pot with the death of the person. Here's another one. For me, there's a lot of spirit in these pots. And it has to do, some of it has to do with the geometry. Again, they're very thought out.
These are all burial pots, you're saying?
Yeah, they're found in
some other kind of function, or they were just...
Well, I mean, it's all speculative.
It's hard to know.
Yeah, It says to me, though, that for a people that lived in an arid land with very little, they weren't like living in Puget Sound or up the Alaska coast, where there's lots of wealth, natural wealth. They had a very rough life, but they also had time and interest to develop a high quality of...
Well, I'm just curious why the design's on the inside instead of...
Good question. They're very small little bowls. Again, this is full of the geometry.
Real art.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's another one. These are real strong for artists working today in clay, because they're just, they're very graphic, they're very immediate. In fact, this is Lucy Lewis again, and you can see how she's picking up. I don't suspect it's consciously, but she's picking up off. Thing doesn't go backwards.
Do you want me to put it there?
There.
That's fine.
Okay. She's picking up on some of what the Mimbres were doing. It's basically her tradition. Okay. This is Africa. This is not a pot. This is either a house or a granary. I suspect it is a granary. It's made out of clay. It's a whole other tradition of clay being architecture, which I'm not getting into today. I include it as an example of form. It has all the components of a good, strong pot in terms of its layout. It has all of the relationship of people using utilitarian objects made out of clay.
Would that be the coil method or the seed brick?
There's probably like an adobe, it's got some straw on it, it's maybe mushed up onto a form of some sort. Here's another one with a straw roof. You can get a sense for the size of them. For me, they're references as part of the tradition of pottery, and even though they're architectural, they have a lot to say about pots. Everything about it is sculptural in a way that a pot is. Well, a pot is much more intimate. Sorry?
I was wondering the temperature for Africa. Are
they
going to be cool?
They'd be very cool, yeah, because they're clay. And if they they're thick, the earth, straw roof, that's cool too. Mm-hmm. Here's a man that lives in a clay house, and he's carrying his umbrella and wearing his bow tie. He looks like he's pretty wealthy to me to have such a fancy house.
Are bricks made out of clay?
Bricks are made out of clay. Uh-huh. His house is probably made out of adobe, which is clay and straw and things mixed together in that fire. But you can take clay and make a brick out of it and fire it. This is how bricks are made.
Okay, and then the bricks are fired and made some hard.
Yeah. Adobe doesn't get fired, and it's hard because it's very, very hot there. And clay has a certain amount of strength when it's dry. Okay, now we're moving on to ancient Persia, the area that's now Iran. This is very, very early. It's before any of the Muslim or Islamic decoration comes in that I have one example of. I included it as just really strong forms again. A lot of spirit in that, and it's hard to talk about where the spirit comes from. For me, it's some of it's the swollenness of the shape, the immediacy of the way those handles are put on there, something about the color, something about the way this is running down here. I often think age has a lot to do with the beauty in objects as well. And the crackle, the lines you see in that are all due to the age of the pieces. I think that adds to the spirit of it. It's another ancient Persian piece. And they're starting to work with the geometry again that's seen throughout the tradition of ceramics. Also more color in these pieces. There's a real tactile quality to this work. This is all earthenware still. It's probably a very small pot, it's very intimate. Somebody spent a lot of time over a long period of time, say their whole life, making pots, decorating them, not learning, not going to school, just doing it over and over and over, developing a sensitivity with their fingers to be able to draw like that and to be able to form clay in that way. It's a skill that's developed over a long time. This is more recent. This is 1500s Islamic. The Persian was early Islamic, sort of pre-Islamic. This is when Islam is really going. And not a real good example of it, but where they're starting to work very, very heavily with decoration. The Quran says not to use images of people, so they sort of decided to put all their energy into flowers and patterning on all the mosques and all of that. We jump into China. China is like the... couldn't begin to talk about it. The tradition is so long. I'm going to talk about it very briefly. They started off with earthenware, of which this is an earthenware pot. Again, it's the drawing on it's tremendous in terms of spiritedness, the strong form as well. To think about how to break up that space and to be able to draw that freshly, it says to me there were probably hundreds and hundreds of these pots that were made.
Is it cut in?
Yeah, I think it's a red pot, red clay. They put a white slip over the whole thing, and then they drew into that white slip, did the drawing. Something that's interesting about pots from a metaphorical point of view is that they're very much about form and about bodies. There's the lip, there's the neck, there's the belly, there's the waist. You listen to potters talk, it's like they're talking about people, really. This is the stance of the pot, there's all of that. Like I was saying, I'm sort of showing you pots I like. I like this pot, but it's real different than those other pots that I've been showing you. It's like a whole other tradition of working. Much crisper.
Is this porcelain now, Terry?
Yeah, we just moved into porcelain.
Was the other one porcelain?
The other one was earthenware. This is porcelain. The Chinese figured out how to work with porcelain in 900 AD, and it again revolutionized the world. Everybody wanted it. There was quite a bit of trading going back and forth. Europe quickly found out about it, couldn't figure out how they did it. The Islamic countries found out about it, couldn't figure out how they did it. Mm-hmm. They took earthenware, put white slip on it, tried to make it look white. And it's real funky stuff. It doesn't look anything like porcelain, and it has its own tradition.
What is porcelain?
Porcelain is a type of clay. It's very, very pure. When the Felspathic Mountains dissolve over time, the clay either washes down the mountainside in the rivers.
This is at a certain place in the world?
It's all over.
Oh, okay.
China was fortunate to be able to find clay that really worked just as it was. Most other people have to take some porcelain from one part of the country, mix it with something else, try to lower the temperature. China had it right there.
So is it kaolin clay?
It's a kaolin clay, The mountain dissolves, it sits right there, it doesn't go down the streams. So it's a very, very pure deposit of clay.
And it's white in color?
Yeah, fire is white. Fire is white. And it's highly prized because it is so beautiful. Partly being white, it reflects color back very well. Partly because the Chinese figured out in 1400 BC, Chinese figured out how to make stoneware to fire very, very hot. They figured out new ways to make kilns that they could get much hotter. That's like 1,000 years maybe before anybody else even started worrying about it. Most countries and most cultures in the world never did worry about it. They just kept working with earthenware. It has its own value.
So that's actually what does it, the temperature?
You get any clay hot enough, it's going to start to melt. Most of them will just melt and slump. porcelain turns into glass, it becomes translucent. You can begin to see through it.
Terry, I have some dishes from China that has the rice in it.
Mm-hmm.
How do they do that?
Those are made in molds.
In molds?
Mm-hmm. They make a form. They make a plaster mold of it.
And they lay
hollow.
The rice in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. They lay the rice in the mold, in the form, make a mold of that, pour liquid clay into that mold, pour it back out, and a little bit of it sticks to the sides of the mold. They open the mold and they have a little pot. Yeah. It wasn't until 1700 that Europe figured out how to make porcelain. So for 1,000 years it was the secret of the Orient. And that's where a lot of our images of the Far East come from, the strangeness of it and all that.
So how did they make the, what did they do to make the fire? They start using coke?
No, it was all wood at that point. Certainly in BC it was all wood. They figured out more efficient ways to fire. Originally people just built maybe a hole in the ground, maybe just made a big pile of their pots, put dung on top of it and lit it. That could get hot enough to turn to ceramic. The Chinese figured out ways to make it taller, make some secondary air come in there, ways to control the heat. Also, they started making very, very large climbing kilns, maybe the size of a house, going up the side of a hill, firing it with lots and lots of wood, maybe over 2 days or over 2 weeks. Tremendous amount of fuel spent and a tremendous amount of labor, but they were able to get very, very high temperatures.
Are you going to come back to porcelain?
No. You got a question?
Yeah. What makes, a long time ago, you hear about Bavarian.
Yeah, that's a whole, porcelain is a whole history in itself, of which I only know a little bit. Everybody was trying to figure out how the Chinese were doing it. Meanwhile, they started to import it to Europe, partly because it was cheap. It was heavy. They put it in the bottom of the boats where water would get in. They put the tea and the silk on top of that. So they could ship tons and tons of porcelain to Europe and tons of tea and silk as well. Meanwhile, everybody's trying to figure it out. They would go to China and Japan and try to figure it out. They weren't getting any information out of people. It was a very closed society at that time. And gradually, various people figured it out. There's soft paste porcelain, which isn't real porcelain. They were sort of taking clay and mixing it things to make it melt. That's not really how this porcelain's made. So there's different kinds of porcelain that were made and still are made. Did I answer your question? Sort of?
Enough. How's the glaze made?
Glaze?
Any glaze.
Glaze is basically glass. Glass melts at a very high temperature, so you add something to flux it. And to control the flux, keep the glass from just running off the side of the pot, you put some clay in the glaze. That stiffens it up and keeps it from melting too much. That's basically what glaze is. And you add colorants, different sorts of metallic oxides to get different colors.
And if you paint the pattern on the pot and then you coat it with a clear glaze?
You could.
Fire it only once?
Could. There's zillions of ways to go with ceramics. This particular pot is earthenware again and it's lead glazed. We've all heard about lead glaze. This is Chinese. There's a tradition of earthenware and stoneware within China. This is part of what's called three-colorware. That's not the best example of it. This is a better example. Using three different colors. What I like about this pot is how runny this is. It's really has a lot of life to it. You often see these things in museums, camels, these big camels with this kind of goofy glaze gooped over the side in those particular colors. A lot of it was made. This is a contemporary pot, and I'm including very few contemporary pots. But it's very much based on the past again, much like Lucy Lewis's work was based on the past. He's using a shiny glaze, it's goopy and it's running down the sides. The man who made it's kind of a nut. His name is George Orr. And when he threw pots, he'd tie that mustache behind his ears long enough to do that. And he worked in Biloxi, Mississippi, the southern potter. Worked at the turn of the century. This is a picture of his pottery. One of his potteries had burned down. These are all his kids. This is his wife. Interesting man. He named all his kids three-letter words. I don't know what to call it. Like, this one's maybe Gio, that one's Tio. Names that the three letters are part of the name of the child is the sound that the letters make. He didn't make much money, as many potters don't. He thought he was the world's best potter, and in a tradition of 10,000 years, that's pretty good. He stored all his best pots away, because he wanted the Smithsonian to have them, he wouldn't sell them. Stored them all in his garage, went and worked for his brother in the automobile, the gas station, became a mechanic, died. 50 years later, somebody came along and bought all his pots from his family. They didn't know what to do with them. It's a garage full of them. And of course, now everybody's buying them, and he's famous. Not a good he's doing any of them.
So they really are worth a lot now, huh?
Yeah. And they're pretty weird. It's pretty kooky. Tradition. There's a lot of life in his pots, too. We're jumping again to Japan. Japan is the oldest tradition of any pottery. It goes back 10,000 years. And again, there's a wide range of pots that are made within the Japanese tradition. This is a pot called, a style of pottery called Bazen, from a town called Bazen. This is wood-fired. One of the greatest compliments of Bazen is that it looks like a beginner made it. So we're talking about a culture that's really sophisticated when it comes to pottery, that they love pots that look like somebody just first pot they ever made when they were 5 years old. This is another pot from another. These are like towns in Japan. This is from Shigaraki. This is also wood fire. This is a very, very large water jar. Sometimes you see those in museums as well. This is all stoneware, and it's probably not glazed, particularly being a water jug. If it had any porosity at all, that would cool the water off. The stuff you see floating around on the sides is just ash from the wood fire. It got hot enough that the ash that was flying around in the kiln started to melt onto the pots. People often say Japanese pottery is an acquired taste. To me, it's a lot about creation again. It's real immediate, it's real, it's not interpreting nature as much as, say, the Mimbres was, but it's very much about nature, about creation. This is a rice bowl. I'm going to read you something about this little bowl. It's made in Korea. You've all heard of the tea ceremony in Japan. It's a very, very big deal, perhaps a religion. This bowl is made in Korea. The Koreans had a big influence on Japanese ceramics. This particular bowl is considered the most beautiful tea bowl ever, which means it's a relic. Someone's talking about hearing all about for years about this bowl. This bowl is several hundred years old. It's passed from generation to generation. Different people owned it. It's kept stored inside several layers of protective cloth and wool and silk and boxes. This man says, "When I saw this tea bowl, my heart fell. A good bowl, yes, but how ordinary. So simple. No more ordinary thing could be imagined. There is not a trace of ornament, not a trace of calculation. It is just a Korean food bowl, a bowl, moreover, that a poor person would use every day, common as crockery. a typical thing for his use, costing next to nothing, made by a poor person, an article without the flavor of personality, used carelessly by its owner, bought without pride, something anyone could have bought anywhere and everywhere. That is the nature of this bowl. The clay had been dug from the hill at the back of the house. The glaze was made with the ash from the hearth. The potter's wheel had been irregular. The shape revealed no particular thought. It was one of many. The work had been fast. The turning was rough, done with dirty hands. The throwing slipshod. The glaze had run over the foot. The throwing room had been dark. The thrower could not read. The kiln was a wretched affair, the firing careless. Sand had stuck to the pot, but nobody minded. No one invested the thing with any dreams. It is enough to give up working as a potter. Goes on. This is as it should be. The plain and unagitated, the uncalculated, the harmless, the straightforward, the natural, the innocent, the humble, the modest. Where does beauty lie if not in these qualities? The meek, the austere, the unornate, they are the natural characteristics that gain people's affection and respect. More than anything else, this pot is healthy. Made for a purpose, made to do work. Sold to be used in everyday life. If it were fragile, it would not serve its purpose. By its very nature, it must be robust. Its healthiness is implicit in its function. Only a commonplace practicality can guarantee health in something made. He's talking about a spirit that he finds in this kind of pottery, that I find in this kind of pottery. He's talking as well about a whole Japanese aesthetic, very rough, very immediate, very much meant to be held. We're looking at this stuff, but it's really meant to be held, to be put to your lips, held in your hands, all of that. This man is as much as anything representing all the continents that I haven't shown y'all. He's a Mexican potter. He's shown a lot of things here. He's shown how potters work. He's shown the labor that's involved with it. He's shown the whole tradition of years and years, centuries of people working. He's shown something for me about the spirituality of making pottery, using your hands, using your body, working with the earth. He's making, again, a real simple pot that's not as ordinary and everyday. This is a Mexican woman as well with her pot, and I'm going to read something that was written on the lip of a pot in the year 600, perhaps by someone like that. I am wandering in the desert, separated from my love. I write these words on this flask that they may be a remembrance of me in this year 600. Trusting that he of whom I dream evermore may refresh himself by putting this pitcher to his lips, that he will recognize my writing and think of me. That's it. Questions, comments, discussion?
What a history.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of mind-boggling, really, to think about it over that amount of time. And it's really the last 100 years, say, that it's stopped being a part of, with plastics come in, and 50 years, 20 years, that the relationship of people with pottery is starting to change.
You showed us this picture of the guy from Biloxi. It sort of surprised me that far back there would be someone, an individual who's identified with particular pots. Should I be surprised that far back, or is that a much longer tradition that we know this is the potter that goes this pot?
Certainly in Japan it's known that Bazen pots are made by certain families, maybe more families than individuals. I heard of a man who went to Japan, started making stuff, just what he wanted to, everybody laughed and laughed and laughed at him. He couldn't figure out why they were laughing. They brought out a scroll that showed all the forms that they made. They didn't make anything else. So what they made was real clearly, this is our pot, our kind of pots.
The Greek painters and potters both signed the works at...
The which? Greek?
Classical.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sort of goes culture by culture, the relationship of the individual and the work. Mm-hmm. As potters get skilled, you're able to see their work, and that certainly would be known amongst people for using it.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was asking about, you know, that the potter in Northfield walked into the art school the other day and said, Charles Helling is using colors. Hmm. And I was just shocked because I've seen his work for about 10 or 15, it's always earth tones, and suddenly there was like this chartreuse pattern. Hmm. What's going on? Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of relationship that I was curious.
Mm-hmm.
The American Indians, did they... What? Did they make some of their own pottery dishes and cook and eat from?
Yeah, uh-huh. Pretty much everything was made that way. It's a immediate material. It's transportable. In hot climates it's good because things cool off as they evaporate to the sides. What we know mostly about American Indians is, say, the mimbres or the stuff that the Pueblo people are now doing that's based on older stuff. But it's really more contemporary work is more geared for as collector's items than it is as functional wares. Mimbres stuff, what we see are maybe ceremonial objects. I don't know if they were, if they everyday objects were that decorated or not. My guess is they had to be in some level to be able to then turn to a ceremonial ritualistic object and paint it that well. They needed to be practicing a whole bunch. Pottery is a repetitive thing. The more you do it, the better you get. You can't just make one pot, decorate it, have it be beautiful. No matter how much you look at pictures of other things, it's still... It's different than painting, too, in that it's round or some sort of shape. It's also more immediate. Painters can go in and change it and come back and really work with it. Pots are very immediate to get it looking as fresh as some of these things were.
Thank you.